chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, this is reminiscing time, I guess. I'm visiting with my former basketball coach, Lefty Drizel. He's a former basketball coach at Davidson, at Maryland, at James Madison, at Georgia State. And but now I retired for a few years, and at some distance, I wanted to visit with him just a little bit about the situation in college athletics as he sees it. And he's agreed to visit with me. Coach Drizel, thanks again for giving me the pleasure of thinking about the time we had together now 50 years ago.
Well, thank you. Don't remind me how many years ago it was, because that's a long time, 50 years.
I know it seems like yesterday. I mean, I have these dreams about basketball, about being back on the court again, about, you know, you're criticizing my defensive posture in some cases.
No, I was praising you. I was probably criticizing your shooting.
Well, I think you came to understand, as I did, that there was nothing that could be done about it. It was just terrible.
No, I mean, you were a great competitor, I tell you that.
Well, I do have a beef with you. You know, the NCAA has established an award for the Defensive Player of the Year.
Right.
And I can't remember who that award was named after or who it honors, but I think it might be you.
I don't know why they picked me for defense. They should have picked me for shooting, because I couldn't play much defense. But my teams played pretty good defense. I guess why. But that's why. But that was quite an honor. I don't know. They just called me up and said, "We're in the Defensive Player of the Year. We're going to name it after you." I said, "Well, that's fine."
Well, I thought about this is not fair to compare it, but when you awarded me the Defensive Player of the Year,
right,
twice, I think, at Davidson, and we just, I mean, my teammates just thought, well, there was nothing else. He surely wasn't an offensive player. There's nothing else they can do other than give him the defensive
player. No, but I tell you, a great defensive player. I've had some great defensive players, and, you were one of them.
Well, I'm glad to be on that list. But when I saw the selection committee, I thought, well, golly, I'm the first college player to get coach's defensive award. Why aren't I on the selection committee, too?
Yeah, that's right. Maybe we'll get you on there.
Well, I'm just teasing, but that would be the greatest honor I'd ever had. I was in talking about your this award, I remembered last year when you came to Carolina to see a basketball game, and all of a sudden, all of the TV cameras got off the court and they started following you. And Lynn Elmore came up to visit with you in the stands.
Right, right.
And I didn't realize how close you all were, but this is what he said. And I think you've got him on. I mean, I think they've got him on your committee, on the award selection committee.
Yeah, he is on there.
And he is not only a great player, but I mean, he's watching college basketball all the time now. But he is a commentator.
Right.
But he said Coach Drizel was one of the finest teachers in the game. He said during his era, he coached some of the outstanding defenders and rebounders in college basketball. Then he goes on to say, much of what I know about the game of basketball, I attribute to him, particularly on the defensive end, where I excelled as a player. And then he goes on, it's only fitting that this award, that is the defensive award, be named for you. I'd say that's a pretty high tribute from somebody who learned basketball, probably would have been a great person and a success anyway. But maybe not. I mean, maybe the opportunity that you gave him to play basketball at a high level is something that he certainly remembers favorably, and maybe made a big difference in his life.
Well, he helped us win a lot of games. You know, he graduated from Harvard Law School, so you know he's a brilliant guy. And I've coached at Maryland. And, well, I coached a Rhodes Scholar, Danny Carroll, at Davidson, and I tell you, Wayne Huckle should have been a Rhodes Scholar.
Absolutely,
he was a finalist. And then Tom McMillan is the only Rhodes Scholar in the history of the University of Maryland. And then Lenny was, I don't think there's been any other players in the ACC that graduated from Harvard Law School. I know there haven't been any Rhodes Scholars. So, I mean, I had the privilege of coaching some pretty smart guys.
Well, there was, yeah, that's right, you did. And I, of course, you got used to that at Davidson, and then you saw that just because you're smart didn't mean that you weren't going to be a good basketball player. But you also had a dose of that when you were playing at Duke as well. I mean,
yeah, that's true, right? Yeah, Duke's a great school. And good. Then I got my master's degree from William & Mary, so I've been around some pretty good, you know, universities. And hopefully it's helped me to live this long. I don't know.
Well, the thing that makes – that people remember – I think people don't remember how smart you are. I mean, you kind of put on with your – you know, some of your country-type sayings that are memorable. When I – right before we came in, Ron Stutz, who's the most famous broadcast person in this area – he said, "You're talking to Lefty." He said, "I'll never forget when Lefty lost a close game at Carmichael, and he came up for the press conference afterwards, and he said, you know, we were looking to understand what he was going to say, and he got up to the microphone and said, well, the sun don't shine on the same dog every day." And then he said, "I never heard that before, anybody but from Lefty."
Well, you
and,
know,
and he remembered this. You know, this must have been 30 years ago, yeah. And he still remembers it.
It's, well, you know, coaches nowadays are so sophisticated. You know, when I was coming up at Duke, my idols when I got into coaching were Adolph Rupp, who was a character. I mean, he gave you that old Southern drawl. And somebody asked him one time, say, "Hey, Adolph, I know why you win all the time. You got the best players." He said, "Well, isn't recruiting part of coaching?" And then I liked old Frank Howard. He was a character, too. He had all these. I remember Duke had a football coach one time. I forget his name was Harp or somebody. And old Frank Howard said, "Well, you know what's the matter with Coach Harp? He's let his success go to his mouth." And so I kind of wanted to be kind of a country boy like Adolph.
So you worked on that. I mean, you then was Frank Howard really your hero in terms
no,
of how
he
to?
Wasn't my hero,
no, but I mean in terms of expressiveness.
Yeah, the way he talked and joked and you know made fun of people. And nowadays these coaches are they make $2 million a year, so I guess they have to be sophisticated. And I wasn't that way. I tried to be the other way, just a a regular guy that most people talk like. I guess that's why I talk that way. I don't know.
Well, did you plot the – I mean, for instance, on this, you can't remember back to this occasion that Ron Stutz remembers so well exactly what happened, but would you plan to have – I mean, did you have a storehouse of these phrases that you might use or did you think about it before you got – they are. Did it just pop into your mind?
No, that was my problem. I didn't think before I talked a lot. I just talked off the top of my head, and I said the wrong thing a lot of times. But, like, you know, I remember Bucky Waters. He said he had a thing made up. If he won, he was going to pull it out of his left pocket. If he lost, he was going to pull it out of his right pocket and make sure he said the right thing, right? Which I should have done the same thing, but I just talked off the top of my head, and a lot of times you know, stepped in my mouth. So,
yeah.
You know, but I wasn't really concerned about my image and stuff like that. I was just the old basketball coach.
Well, Coach Rizal, I wanted to visit with you about two things, and after the break, maybe we can get into those. One is about the current college athletic situation as you see it looking back, and the other is I wanted to just reminisce with you a little bit about the 1960s and the African American or black basketball players sort of but began to come into Southern college basketball and whether or not you've got some stories you could tell us about that. But right now we'll take a break. I'm visiting with my basketball coach, Coach Lefty Drizel. He and I'll be right back after this short break.
chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com, more of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Coach Lefty Rizal. For those of you who were, there's nobody who doesn't know you, Coach. Coached four different college teams and successful at all of them. Coach, are you the only basketball coach who's taken four different schools to the NCAA tournament?
There's about 100 games at four different universities.
100 games at four.
I don't know. I know Jim Herrick is one. Somebody else. There are about three of us that have taken four different universities to the NCAAs.
Amazing. Let's visit a little bit about college athletics now. You know, in Chapel Hill, we've gone through really an agonizing time. Carolina prided itself on, it still does, prides itself on combining great athletics with a solid academic record. And it's always been a challenge. I mean, it was a challenge for you at Davidson, a challenge for you maybe even more at Maryland and at the other schools. But you've been reading about Carolina and you've been reading about the problems at the other schools. Is the partnership between academics and college athletics a sustainable one in your view now?
Yeah, I think it is. But you know what? I think they do too much for athletes. That may sound crazy, but we never had any tutors when you went to Davidson. And all of my players graduated. And, of course, you had to have a B average and 1,000 on the SAT to get in. But still, you know, I think they, you know, I've had players or heard, and nobody ever told me this to my face, but I've had tutors tell me, they're not going to fail me. That's what they hired you for. You know, I mean, to me, you know, if a guy can get into college, I don't care if he's got to spend a couple hours a day or whatever it is. I think coaches practice too long, too. You know, at Davidson, I never practiced more than 2 hours a day. Now they can practice 20 hours a week. Mm. And they think like, oh, that's not enough. And they got them there all summer working out and when they should be home having fun and reading books or, you know, doing something different. I just think it's too much help for these guys. You know, you feed these athletes with tutors and help them and then when they get out, who's going to help them on their job? They're going to have a tutor when they got a job. You know, they ought to come to college and, you know, be able to pass on their own. If they don't, flunk out and go to junior college. But that's the only thing I think. I think you, right now you baby these guys too much with academic advisors. And, you know, if you sit down and write a paper, an academic advisor looks it over and says, this sentence is no good. Write that over. This is not a paragraph. You know, you're really not doing the paper yourself. So I think, you know, academically they help them too much. That might sound bad, but, you know, if there were just regular students there and they got in school, they don't get tutors unless they pay for them. You know, I guess it's helped a lot in that. You know, I had a kid at Maryland, and I don't want to tell you his name, but he was a non-predictor. He came there, and we got him tutors. We didn't get as many tutors as they have now, but he made academic All-ACC by his senior year. And he was he had to pay his own way his first year. He's a good player, too. He played on an Olympic team. So, you know, I don't know. I guess you can help people, but sometimes I think right now they help athletes too much. They think that tutor is going to get them through, whether they do any work or not.
I'm putting words in your mouth. Your impression is that the kid starts to think that it's the tutor's responsibility that his success is in the hands of his tutor rather than being on his own shoulders.
Yep, I do think that. I've heard that. I've had tutors tell me, "Hey, coach, he said that, you know, you'll fire me if I don't pass." And I said, "Well, I called a guy and let me tell you something, you know, but." That's what I I don't know. I guess tutors help, but they give them so much help, and they have to go to summer school. See, originally, you couldn't pay an athlete's way to go to summer school before his freshman year. And, you know, in fact, John Lucas, who was a good student, his dad was a principal at Hillside High School. You know, he paid John's way to come to summer school before his freshman year, so he took English and math and got it out of the way. But nowadays, you can pay guys' way to go to summer school. All of them in summer school. I know North Carolina signed a kid from here, McAdoo, who's really a good player and a good student, but he's been down there all summer in summer school. You know, I mean, I think it, you know, you help them too much sometimes. I mean, I guess it's good. But you never had a tutor, did you? I don't think anybody at Davidson never had a tutor. I really don't. Now, I've got on them about going to class, but we never had any tutors.
No, it's kind of funny. I can remember some of the players complained. You said you limited your practices to 2 hours a day, but some of the players complained that that was interfering with their academic work.
They probably did.
And so you said, well, maybe I can help you with your schedule. Why don't you bring your schedule up to my office after practice today, and we'll go over your schedule and see if we can't find some time for you.
I probably did do that. I don't remember.
But. Well, that was your answer was not, I'm going to shorten practice or you're out of practice, but bring your schedule and we'll find.
Right.
I believe I can find some time.
Daily schedule. Well, that's like, you know, Tom McMillan, who was a Rhodes Scholar for me at Maryland, you know, he used to have a card every day. He'd come into the gym and say, okay, I'm going to shoot jump shots from the left-hand corner for 10 minutes. I'm going to shoot hooks from the left-hand for, and I'm going to work on my dribbling for 10 minutes. I'm going to shoot 100 free throws. And he had time. He'd come in and do more than most of my players who stayed there 3 hours fooling around with basketball. The players didn't like him in particular, but he never scrimmaged with him. He just came in and had a little schedule, and he did the same thing with the schoolwork. He said, I'm going to get up in the morning, eat breakfast, and I'm going to go to class, and I'm going to study on physics from 9 to 10 or whatever. And, you know, I think that's better than, you know, feeding them all these tutors and stuff that they have, but.
Well, I remember, you talk about lessons learned, and one of the things that I'm a proponent of college athletics because I think you learn, and the military, because you learn things in there that you don't learn in your classroom, and one of them is in scheduling, and I don't think it's unusual now, but it was unusual for me when you came in. You had your 2 hours of practice scheduled to the minute. I mean, there was a plan. We might vary from the plan, but you talk about Tom McMillan's plan that when you've got a plan, even if you vary from it, that you're more likely to have a full and complete and better use of that time than if you kind of go in and say, well, I wonder what I'll do now. Maybe I'll work on my free throws for a little bit. Well, and then you forget that you also needed to work on
your ball handling,
on your weak hand and all of these things, but you kind of get a plan that – now, Coach, I'm getting off topic, but I'll talk to you about what I've gotten interested in now, and that is writing authors and people who write books. And I've got some authors who say, well, I don't and they're some of the best. And I don't want to criticize them because their work comes out good. But they say, well, how do you write your book? Well, I just start writing and then the characters kind of take charge. And, you know, I just kind of go with the flow. And before you know it, I've got a story. And then talk to other authors and they tend to be more successful in selling their books, like the thrillers and the Mystery Institute. I talked to one author who's very successful, and he said, I wrote a 140-page outline of my book. I said, 140-page outline? He said, well, that was just the outline to show to the prospective publisher. He said, well, then I wrote a 200 40-page outline for a book that's 240 pages. So that everything that he had a plan for everything he did. And he said, then after I got my plan, writing the book's easy. I just follow my plan. So,
right.
I mean, there are two different styles, and I'm sure that there are coaches and players who are very good, who are more relaxed and have, you know, kind of take things in a relaxed way.
Right. Well, but, I mean, my thing is, I think we're spoiling these athletes, you know. When they get out of school, you know, nobody's going to tutor them. Nobody's going to tell them you get up on time. You know, I've had assistant coaches that had to go over and wake up players and make, you know, I had to check on them whether they were going to class or this or that. And, you know, but when they get out of college, who's going to take care of them? You know?
Yeah, but coach, the pressure is on the coaches in the schools and the conferences and the NCAA to have success in terms of graduation rates. And
oh, yeah, I know.
And
yeah.
So it's in service to the coach says, okay, some of these kids that I brought in, if I leave them to their own devices, they're not going to graduate. I mean, they're just, you know, they didn't have the supervision when they were growing up. They don't have good study habits. They're really not prepared for college.
It can be a good thing, but it can also spoil them.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Denny Crum used to say, and I think he's got a point. You know, if a kid comes to college for 4 years and it stays eligible, you got to pass 12 credits to stay eligible each semester, right? Or, yeah, something like that. Okay, and he doesn't graduate, so what? He's better off, isn't he? I mean, at least he's been in college for 4 years. He doesn't have a degree. Some of the most wealthy people in the world never got a college degree. My brother-in-law, he got more money than he knows what to do with. He never went to college. So, you know, if you go 4 years and stay eligible, you've done something.
Well, I agree with you about that. The graduation, but the graduation is the diploma.
Oh, yeah.
It's a mark.
In this day and time, you got to have a degree. You're right on that. But, you know, sometimes just don't overdo it. Don't spoil them and do stuff for them. I mean, right now, you got the computer. A lot of people get a degree on a computer now, can't they?
Yeah. You know? Now we're straying off our areas of expertise, but yeah, we'll get on to higher education reform and how we're going to provide higher education on an affordable basis. But that'll be another day. I'll tell you what, Coach Drizel, let's take a break.
Okay.
Come back and we'll visit some more about the challenges of college athletics today and also about some of the history.
All right.
Coach Drizel, and I'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is my former basketball coach, Lefty Drizel, who succeeded in spite of having some pretty bad players to start with. I think you got to Davidson, you took a look at us, and you said, I got to recruit, man.
No, yeah. Hey, we won that first game. We beat Bones McKinney in Wake Forest, remember?
I'll never forget.
So we started off pretty good.
I'll tell you the truth. Before that game, you gave your fish or cut bait speech, which is – I got some of you who are going to be fishing, and y'all are going to be fishing most of the game. And then I got some of you got to sit on the bench and support them. And so I was on the cut and bait team at Wake Forest. But there's some people who remember that I was on the court.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
And I don't correct them. I let them remember the way they want to remember. That was a great.
I know. I tease Billy Pack about that all the time.
That's funny because Billy Packer and I were in the same class, so we played against each other as freshmen and then all the way through. He doesn't remember me, but I sure remember him. And what does he say about that game? This is when Davidson, your first college game, you upset, I believe, the number one team in the country, Wake Forest.
Right. Well, they ended up third. They won the consolation game in the Final Four. Well, he always says Chapel wasn't there, you know, which he's right on that. But we would have beat him with or without Chapel, what I tell him.
Well, he could have come down. He was in the stands, I think. He was.
Was he? I forgot.
I believe. Well, I want to talk a little bit more about current college athletics, just to be sure that we talked about some of the particular problems of tutoring and of the kind of services that the major college athletes get, and you're thinking that they may get a little too much for their own good. What about the going back 50 years, I don't think you had any real problems complying with the rules of the NCAA when you first started coaching. I mean, they were kind of simple rules. If you compare the challenges that a coach has, he's almost got to have a lawyer at his side, doesn't he, to comply
with? Well, not really. Look, when I first started coaching, the rules were you could give a kid room, board, tuition, books, and fees, right? That was in $15 a month. We gave him $15 a month. Well, at Davidson, we didn't, because Davidson was an academic, school, we didn't even give him $15 a month. And finally, I talked, but at Davidson, a full scholarship included all your laundry free. You remember that?
No, I remember that well. Yeah,
other schools were saying, okay, we'll give you room, board, tuition, books, and fees and $15 a month. And so the recruits would say, well, coach, what about my $15? I said, look, I'm going to give you all the laundry, and parents love this. I said, you can bring as many clothes as you want. You can wear them one time and take them to the laundry, and it's all free. That comes to more than $15 a month. So I'm giving you a little extra. but Maryland, Davidson, I don't know if they ever started giving $15 a month, but when I was there, they didn't. But I told them it, and I told the parents, I said, look, in fact, when I went to Duke, I used to send my laundry home in a little thing, and my mother would, wash it for me and send it back to me. But, things have changed. And
so
you're talking about the number of rules?
Well, I'm just...
Now a coach has to take a test once a year, compliance test.
Yes, sir.
And the only thing I pride myself in being the first one to get out of there. You can look through the book if you want to, but sensibly, you can give a guy room, board, tuition, books, and fees, and that's it. And some of the rules about, recruiting, you can only recruit from March and April, and you got June and July off or whatever. Now, that's, that makes a little difference. I don't like that rule because I think that's not American. You should be able to work 12 months out of the year, 24 hours a day if you want to. And now, and all this stuff about telephone calls, I think that's ludicrous. And the reason they put that rule in was I used to spend a lot of money on telephone calls, calling recruits. I called Moses Malone every day and talked, when I could catch him. But now, don't you have free phone systems?
It's a different deal. The long
distance. It's a different deal.
Yeah.
I can make it. I can call right now. I can get on my phone call and call anybody I want to, and I pay the same amount every month. And so I think that's a ridiculous rule. Some of the rules that they have are ridiculous, and they can't enforce them, number one. And number two, just have room, board, tuition, books, and fees, and then let everybody recruit as much as they want to. If Davidson doesn't have much money as Duke to recruit on, then they're probably not going to get the players that Duke wants anyway. So, I think he got too many rules. And some of these guys that say this, so they got so many they can't understand them, that's a bunch of baloney too.
Well, Coach, let me shift gears while we're talking about these challenges. And there seems like a sort of growing idea, not so much within the college and universities communities, but in the sports commentators who are talking about that college sports needs to adapt by paying these college athletes, not the $15 a month or whatever it is now, expense money, but
no, it's nothing now. They get nothing. But I violently disagree with that. Look, if a guy wants to make money, let him go to the NBA or the NFL or the major league. College athletics is an amateur sport, and I violently disagree with that. I mean, hey, and as a matter of fact, most of these kids that are poor get Pell Grants. You familiar with that?
Yes, sir.
Or how much is that? That's a lot of money. And then, see, when you were at Davidson, Mike Malloy was poor, but he didn't get any Pell Grant. And you know, you didn't either. You were poor. No, you weren't poor. But anyway.
We were poor, but we didn't know it. We thought we were rich.
Right, you know, but I'm just saying, you know, paying athletes in college is a joke. I mean, I think that's totally wrong. It's not amateur. If they want to get paid, let them go pro. If they're not good enough to go pro, then they get a summer job or whatever. Most of the time, my players at Davidson and Maryland, they had summer jobs. And not sure that the school should be responsible for getting them a summer job. Let them get down, let them go back home. See, most athletes, and you've read this yourself, football players, I just read an article yesterday about a quarterback from here in Virginia Beach at Alabama. They have 7-on-7, I think it was, practices every day that the coaches can't be there, but the quarterback runs it.
Oh, is that right?
So the kids, he could be here at Virginia Beach working out with his high school team or something if he wanted to, but he's down there at Alabama and he's helping run 7-on-7 scrimmages in the summertime, which to me that's too much emphasis on athletics. Athletics are supposed to be fun and, you know, amateur. Certainly don't pay the guy. I wouldn't pay him anything.
Well, now, how do you really feel about it? I mean, how do you really feel?
No, I'm just,
I'm just teasing. No, you weren't. There was no ambiguity there, Coach.
Yeah, no. If you're going to pay him, in the first place, how are you going to pay him? Ohio State might pay him more than Michigan, or Duke might pay him more than North Carolina. I mean, it's ridiculous. You can't do that. In fact, all the money that they're making off of the Final Four and television, to me, I think it should be split up amongst all schools, not just ACC and Big East and Big Ten, and you know, because how the other schools going to catch up with them? And you can't catch up with them in recruiting because of all those recruiting rules. If we had recruiting rules when I was at Davidson, we probably wouldn't have gotten Fred Hetzel or Mike, you know, or Jerry Kroll or some of the guys that were highly recruited, Dick Snyder. So I think they're making basketball, and the coaches make too much money. Some coaches making what, $3 million a year? That's ridiculous.
Well, are you?
I mean,
does it tempt you to go back into the profession?
Yeah, I wish I was younger. You know, when I went from Davidson to Maryland, you know what my salary was at Maryland, and I don't know if Jim Kehoe was telling me the truth. He said you, the highest paid coach in the ACC, was $14,000.
Well.
And I would have made 12 if I'd have stayed at Davidson. Well, so, I mean, you're paying these guys all this money. There's all kind of rumors going around that coaches are hiring, you know, agents for themselves and they're looking out after their players. I don't know what's going on, but coaches are making too much money.
We're visiting with Coach Lefty Driesell, and I'll be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with DG Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is DG Martin, and my guest is Coach Lefty Driesell. Coach Driesell, time's flying. And one of the things that I wanted to reminisce with you about were the 1960s. And the entrance into the basketball teams of Southern colleges and universities of African-American players, which kind of came on pretty suddenly. And you were a part of the recruitment. I don't want to, you know, we're in Chapel Hill, and so we don't want to get into too sensitive territory. But those of us who have Davidson connections still remember the Charlie Scott recruiting competition. I guess that.
Right.
But that also has historic significance, I guess, in terms of bringing the talented African-American basketball players into the previously pretty much all-white college teams. And when all of this was happening, when did you decide that you had the leeway to go after black players after being, you know, I guess.
Yeah, I was brought up in Norfolk, Virginia, where we had segregation, and I never agreed with it. I used to sit in the back of the streetcar with the African Americans, or Mr. Lucas calls them guys with a good suntan. Mm. That's the way I look at them, right? Always have. I used to sit back there and see it. When I was growing up, if you were on a streetcar and all the seats were filled up, a black woman had to give up, stand up, and let a white man sit down. Well, I fought that. I would get, even if it wasn't filled up and a black woman came on, I'd get up and give her my seat. Everybody kind of looked at me like I was nuts. But I just never did believe in all that stuff. And so, you know, I was recruiting the best players. I didn't care what color they were, whether they're black or Chinese.
Well,
or
yeah, but
whatever.
Coach, when you first came to Davidson, you couldn't recruit a black player because Davidson wouldn't enroll them.
I know, but finally, you know, I had a kid visit from Pembroke. He was an Indian. And everybody said, hey, Lefty, you can't recruit him. You can't. I said, he's an Indian. He's not black. But Mike Malloy was, in fact, I looked it up this morning. I couldn't find it. I think he was one of the first three or four black students at Davidson. You can look that up yourself.
Well, I believe that probably is right, yeah.
He was one of the first. So, you know, and he was great for the university. And, you know, you were down there for the big fundraising thing they had. And Lester Strong was the first black president of the union board. So, you know, I didn't look at them as black and white. I just looked at them as basketball players.
When did you feel like you had the green light from the college administration to go?
Well, I guess they passed the rule. I can't recall. But
well, as soon as the college admitted black players,
yeah,
you went
yeah,
after them.
Right. Oh, yeah, exactly. And, in fact, Charlie Scott, was the first one that I signed. He and Mike Malloy are the first two African-American, or whatever you want to call them, people of color that played basketball south of the Mason-Dixon line. And Maryland had a couple of, you know, black players. But nobody else in the ACC, the Big East, all the southern states had black players. And they were the first two. And, you know, Charlie went on to North Carolina, and Mike stayed at Davis. In fact, Charlie's called me on the phone yesterday, and he calls me from time to time. And he was telling me, when we hung up, he said, Coach, I tell people all the time that you made me. I said, how'd I make you? Making that shot against us that kept us out of the Final Four? He said, no, nobody would have known about me if you hadn't recruited me. So he and I have remained good friends, even though it did keep us out of the Final Four a couple of times.
Well, that is a story. But so I mean, it had to be go through your mind that we're making history as we're recruiting these black players and opening the door. I mean, were you just so focused on getting a good basketball team that you?
Yeah, I was just focused. In fact, you know, George Raveling, who is black, I hired him. He was the first black coach of any head coach or assistant coach in the ACC. But I liked George. I didn't look at him as a black guy.
Well, now,
I just
wait.
Liked him. I met him.
No, but you're thinking this guy's going to help me recruiting these black players that I can recruit now. I mean,
maybe, but I guess that entered my mind, but I didn't go around looking for a black coach. I knew George when he was assistant at Villanova, and I'd met him at clinics and things, and Jack Kraft's basketball camp, and I just liked the guy. I didn't say, well, he's going to help me get. In fact, I'm going to tell you the truth. George won't admit this, but he didn't like recruiting black guys.
Really?
He told me John Lucas was no good. You don't need John Lucas. He's not there. He told me that David Thompson couldn't play.
No.
I'm telling you the truth. You asked George. He said if David Thompson was up here in D.C., he'd just be another player. But I didn't listen to him. I recruited him anyway. And I recruited Lucas. But George, he recruited Mark Cartwright. He helped me more recruit Billy Hahn. He helped me recruit more white guys than he did black. But I didn't hire him because I wanted him to recruit black players. I hired him because I liked the guy, and he was intelligent, he was smart, and I really liked him.
Coach, down here, you've got loyalty to your alma mater at Duke, and of course, you got good connections at Maryland, and then you like the coaches at Carolina. What do you see in just a minute? We just got a minute left, but how do you see this upcoming basketball season going? Is Carolina?
Well, I like Carolina. I think they're going to be really good. You know, a lot of people thought Jordan Williams at Maryland made a mistake going pro, but I think he made a great decision. He wouldn't have been the best big man in the league next year. Carolina's got a couple of big guys. Duke's got a couple of big guys, and Carolina's got more experience than Duke. I was just looking at a little paper here a minute ago, and you know, Duke's got four freshmen. I don't know if McAdoo will play or not, but he was the most valuable player in the McDonald's thing, and he's a good kid. I've seen him play around here before. In fact, his dad, I coached against his dad. His dad played at Old Dominion. So, I think North Carolina. The guy asked me the other day, guy working at my house, said, I want to make a lot of money next year betting on basketball. Who's going to win the national championship? I said, North Carolina, but don't bet on it.
Well, that's a good place. Gosh, I hate to stop this, Coach. We're just getting started. Thanks for visiting. I hope you'll let me do it again because
yeah, anytime.
And you're supposed to be in Chapel Hill, people would think that you and Dean Smith aren't good friends, that you're not, but
yeah,
everybody
are.
In Chapel Hill seems to love you, Coach.
No, I really respect you. In fact, I told Chuck, my son, look, you copy Dean, don't copy me, because I said the wrong thing all the time. He never said the wrong thing.
Well, you said the right things today, Coach. Thanks so much. And our guest has been Coach Lefty Drizzell. Thanks to all y'all for listening. I'll be right back here before you know it.